and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here talking to you guys on a Monday night with the Wizards back on the East Coast before they're going to face the Brooklyn Nets, I should say, Tuesday night in Brooklyn, close up that road trip. Then they are back home Wednesday to start a four-game homestand against the Memphis Grizzlies. I'll be out there on Wednesday. We're going to talk today on this year podcast about not only this game coming up against the Nets, but also there's some recent connection, obviously, between the Wizards and the Nets. There's the Andrew Nicholson, Bojan Bogdanovic trade. There's also the Nets trying to poach Otto Porter this past offseason with a free agent contract. And it's also two teams who are just, well, they're about to play each other. So there's another one right there. And I talked with Gavin Shaw, who does the Locked On Nets podcast just a few moments ago. I'm going to play that conversation for you here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Of course, you can find all of our podcasts on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Standing. Email bstandig1@gmail.com. And if you want to read things that I write about the Wizards, go check out nbcwashington.com along with FanRag Sports. Those are the primary places where you'll find my wizarding kind of work. So we'll get to the conversation with Gavin in just a few moments. A couple of quick notes here on the Wizards. Reported today out of Brooklyn, three things to note. One, Jan Mahimi didn't participate. He's dealing with, I think it was described as a sore knee, something to that effect. So he's day-to-day listed as questionable for the game tomorrow. That's obviously something to keep an eye on because, look, knee injury is what, you know, wrecked his first year with the Wizards. He's just beginning to be, you know, legitimately productive for Washington. He had 14 points in the last game. So curious to see where this goes. You know, it's not necessarily a big deal if he misses a game, but, you know, reoccurring issues would not be cool. As for John Wall, he continues to make progress with the Wizards. Scott Brooks remains coy, according to reports, about where he's going to go with this. Is Wall going to come back for Brooklyn? Is he going to be ready for the Grizzlies on Wednesday, or is it going to wait until later in the week? In any event, Brooks told reporters, Candace Buckner with the Post tweeted out that Brooks said he can't commit to Wall playing on Tuesday, but that he's moving in the right direction. So, you know, look, the fact that the Wizards are playing in a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, you'd think somewhat logical. Wait the extra day, have them come back home to face Memphis. Not a matter of whether the Nets, you can win without him or not. You think you could, but it's more of this, you know, hey, might as well wait that extra beat and, give them a little more time. So two things to watch on the Wizards front. From the Brooklyn front, for whatever it's worth, it sounds like Jahlil Okafor will be playing in the game. He'll make his Nets debut following the trade from Philadelphia that sent ex-Wizard Trevor Booker to the Sixers. So we'll get a look, I don't know for how long, at Jahlil Okafor. And, you know, look, we all know he's had some good success against the Wizards in the past. He's been on, been kept on ice here the last little bit by the Sixers as they try to figure out a way to get out from his situation. All right, in any event, the Wizards and Nets going at it on Tuesday night in Brooklyn. Let's get into some thoughts here. Again, talk to Gavin Shaw, hosts the Locked On Nets podcast. Went a little, put a little co-host. I asked him questions, he asked me questions. So, like I said, there's some interesting connections with these teams over the last couple of years. So let's get into it. Wizards Nets on Tuesday night. My conversation with Gavin Shaw of Locked On Nets. All right, so Ben Standing here, and as promised, joining the podcast, crossover edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, with the guy who runs the Locked On Nets podcast, Mr. Gavin Shaw. And Gavin, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to chat. And look, there's reasons to talk about the Nets and the Wizards, partly because of the fact that it's the next game. So there's that. But these two teams made a trade last year. And I know from the Wizards' end, there's still a lot of conversation about that trade. Did the Wizards do the right thing? What the hell did they get out of it? But I don't think about it too much from the Nets' perspective. So that's kind of where I want to start. But I guess first and foremost, how are things going in the Brooklyn side of the thing?
Yeah, and in a general sense, I'd say about as well as could possibly be expected, given the fact that they're clearly their two best players going into the season are, in the case of Jeremy Lin, out for the year, and then in the case of D'Angelo Russell, out indefinitely. So basically this season has been, at least on the injury front, just about the worst case scenario for a Brooklyn Nets team that still somehow, after all these years, does not have their first round pick this season. But given that context, I think they played about as well as could be expected, and probably quite a bit better than that, if I'm being honest. Spencer Dinwiddie has been something of a revelation for this team, a guy who was all but out of the league last season, and now he's I don't want to put him in the upper echelon of point guards just because that position is so deep, but he's second in the entire league in assist to turnover ratio, shooting the ball extremely well, better than I thought he could, even though he showed off a pretty strong three-point stroke last season. And then all the other pieces are kind of fitting into place. Guys like Joe Harris have kind of come out of left field and turned into solid NBA rotation players, and this Nets team is somehow only three games out of the playoffs with everything I mentioned. I don't think this was a team, even with full health, was expected to be at this level. So I'm pretty darn impressed with the job they've done, and I'm content with this Nets season so far.
Spencer Dinwiddie is a member of the last man standing All-Star team in the Locked On Wizards Fantasy League. So very excited for his progression for sure. For these last few weeks. So let's go back to that trade for a second. Obviously, just for those who don't remember, but if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to guess you do. The Wizards traded the contract of Andrew Nicholson and a 2017 first round pick to Brooklyn for Bojan Bogdanović. Obviously, Bogdanović was with the Wizards for the last 20 odd games of the regular season and the playoffs. Gave them a boost right off the bat from 3-point shooting and helped the bench scoring in general. But ultimately, we know what happened. Wizards didn't get any further than they have typically in the playoffs. He left in the offseason and signed with the Pacers. Meanwhile, Brooklyn took that Andrew Nicholson contract, traded it, and a bunch of other things went to Portland, right, in the Allen Crabb deal?
Yeah.
And then you guys took in the first round Jared Allen. So from your guys' perspective, I mean, just going back to when it happened, I'm sure you weren't like – I mean, you knew Bogdanović was going to be a free agent. I presume you didn't necessarily think you were going to keep him. So what did you think of that trade at that time? What was the take on it from the Brooklyn end?
I wasn't covering the team at the time, but I thought in the moment it was a pretty strong move for both teams. I mean, you got to keep in mind with the Wizards, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but at least to my memory, they made a lot of these kind of win now moves over the year. Obviously, drafting Otto Porter was kind of an exception to that, but it seems like their focus has kind of been on building a team that can compete in the East around John Wall and Brad Beal while the duo are still young and kind of before they get jaded. And this team has it's been a long, long time since they made the Eastern Conference Finals. So I thought it kind of made sense for Washington to make that push, and just because they have been all in, to kind of stick with that mentality. But I don't know. From a Nets perspective, it was interesting. I think it was something that they had to do, even though Bojan was objectively one of their better players at the time. The team wasn't going anywhere. They didn't have their own first-round pick. And in typical Sean Marks fashion, he's kind of been able to maneuver first-round picks out of thin air, which is particularly incredible in this kind of modern NBA climate where first-round picks outside of superstars are just about the most valuable currency a team can possess, and somehow, some way, Sean Marks seems to be able to keep dealing for them. So, and this was kind of the first of a few of those trades, and I even in retrospect, and even currently, really, really like that trade for the Nets.
Yeah, to answer your question, yeah, in the last 4 years, the Wizards have of the potential eight picks you could have out of two rounds in each draft, only one, Kelly Oubre, has actually even played with the Wizards. They've traded away three of the other first-round picks, and most of their second-round picks they kept one, but Aaron White's been overseas the whole time. So, yeah, the trading for a pick for Bojan was sort of business as usual, and from the Wizards' end, it was sort of like, well, their bench was a disaster last year. I don't think that's breaking news. They needed some kind of scoring. And since they were clearly a good enough team to compete, it was sort of like, well, we might have a chance to actually make the Eastern Conference Finals, but we need to do something else. So we've already gone this far. Let's go a little bit more. And, you know, they made the move. I can't say I objected to it too much, just because like they didn't need to do something. But ultimately, it is you have to remember how they got in this position. They had a lot of misses during free agency last year, including Andrew Nicholson, Jan Mahimi, as well. And because they whiffed on some of those guys so badly, they were forced to sort of kind of do this deal. Jared Allen, I mean, he's a guy, he's, you know, another young big man project type. I guess now maybe he's going to be even a little bit further in the depth chart behind Okafor. But ultimately, he's a guy that all Wizards fans are going to be paying attention to, just the way we did when they traded Marcin Gortat and the Phoenix Suns ended up taking Tyler Ennis. I'm blanking on the name of the guy that they took from
Marquise Morris, and then they ended up with Marquise Chris. But that was after trading with the Kings too. So I was actually covering Phoenix at the time, so I was going to talk about it from that perspective. But yeah, that was another pretty interesting one. And I guess again transitive property because they had to do a whole big deal with the Kings too to get Chris. But maybe that is another guy for Wizards fans to look out for, or even someone like Scalabissier, who the Suns snagged later in that draft.
Yeah, I'll pull it up. It's a guy. It's one of the international guys. That's why I'm blanking on his name. I don't want to butcher it. But what's the deal with Jared Allen? Do you think Wizards fans are gonna? Is he gonna be a guy that people are gonna be going, oh, I can't believe the Wizards could have had that guy? I mean, I know it's super early, and he was a freshman, I think, coming out. So I'm sure it's early to tell. But so far, have you seen signs of life to be like, oh yeah, this guy looks pretty interesting, or?
Yeah, I don't think Wizards fans are going to be happy to hear this, but he's been, I think, a lot further along than most Nets pundits and fans expected. I don't really know what the internal expectations for him, other than the fact that he was expected to be part of the rotation coming into the season. But this is a guy who was raw even on the college level. And then early this season, like the first – I mean, obviously, we're still within the first 25 games, so it's early period. But first 10 games to maybe even 15, he looked just, like, super-duper raw. Like, there were really good signs on defense and, like, good instincts, and he had a couple monster blocks, but couldn't really hold on to the ball on offense and was, like, missing on lobs and had, like, three or four missed dunks in the first 10, 11 games of the year. And you wanted to blame it on nerves, but you start to get, like, a little bit of a creeping feeling when a big doesn't kind of immediately show off that coordination that is really the mark of someone who's going to be an effective NBA player. But it really has flipped, especially over the last five or six games. He's coming off his last game in the United States before the Nets Mexico City trip was pretty easily the best game of his career. I think he had about 11 points, but just went on a run where he had like five dunks in five possessions, and Caris LeVert just kept throwing him lob after lob after lob. And you get visions of just how good this guy can be down the road defensively. I don't necessarily have the advanced stats on him, but as far as the eye test goes, he looks like he's already the Nets' most effective defensive big. And that's not out of a super competitive group, so maybe it's not saying much. But he looks really, really good on that end, switching on pick and roll, staying with guards for short periods of time, showing off really good instincts, knocking the ball away from guys, grabbing steals. We mentioned the rim protection. He's not afraid of anyone. He's gone after a bunch of guys at the rim, has gotten dunked on a few times, but has also sent a few guys back, especially Kevin Love a few weeks ago when he was kind of getting babied and Love was kind of pushing him under the basket. And then at the last second, Allen just turns around and swats it. So there have been some really, really encouraging signs on both ends on the floor. I was saying it before this draft. I was saying it after this draft. I'm definitely saying it with how these guys have been performing. I think this 2017 group is one of the three or four best drafts in the last 20 years. And I know that's an opinion shared by a lot of guys around the league. And I think the Nets getting Jared Allen at 22 is pretty representative of that fact. So I'd be a little bit concerned if I'm a Wizards fan and I traded out of that pick for a guy that only lasted a year. And I know, as you said, the rationale made sense at the time. I agree with it. I just don't know if it's going to turn out well for them.
Well, that'll go over well. I'm sure when the listeners...
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't mean to bum you out.
No. I'm sure when the listeners hear this, they will take it in stride and feel good about the situation. And of course, one of the things with the Wizards is, you know, they don't have... other than Markieff Morris, like pretty much all their bigs are on the wrong side of 30. So having a young guy would be kind of cool, But you never know. I mean, you never know if they would have taken him anyway. But regardless, that's always a guy you're going to track. And so far, yeah, based on what you're saying, it sounds like it could be one that they will regret. But what are you going to do? Ben Standing here talking with Gavin Shaw from the Locked On Nets podcast. So we got this game coming up. The Wizards have been incredibly up and down the last, well, pretty much the whole season. But this road, this stretch without John Wall of 8 games, where they've gone 4-4, it's been pretty much similar to the season. They look pretty good against some of the better teams, but against teams that you think, okay, well, this should be a win, they have struggled against. So, you know, the Nets would qualify as a team that the Wizards may look past, but they are coming off a loss to the Clippers, in which they had the Clippers beat and then basically pissed it away in the last minute of the game and lost with a kind of crazy finish. You mentioned the Nets have had a bunch of injuries. So, yeah, obviously, they have NBA talent and all, but, I mean, do you think are the Nets playing at a level right now where they can catch the Wizards napping, or you think the Wizards, if they show up, should be able to get this one?
I'm kind of torn on that because the Nets have pretty consistently shown off the ability to compete with just about anyone in the NBA, which again is stunning considering the injuries and like just like the various things they've had to deal with this season. The obvious talent depletion of not having those draft picks over the last few years, but they beat the Cavs earlier in the season at home, and then they had back-to-back games about 2 weeks ago against the Cavs and Warriors, where both were very close going into the final 2-3 minutes and winnable for the Nets. And they just haven't really gotten blown out a ton this year. The Rockets were the one team that came in and just kind of destroyed them. But they've been competitive game in and game out, particularly on their home floor. So I'd expect a pretty good game if I'm the Wizards. If John Wall plays, they're clearly the favorite, and I'd be kind of disappointed if I'm a Washington fan and you don't wrap that one up, but it should be close going into the final couple of minutes. That being said, one mitigating factor, and obviously they've had 3 days off now, so maybe they'll be okay. Playing in Mexico City, it was extremely taxing on this team. You know just how high the elevation is there. It makes Denver look kind of like New York almost relatively. So they could be exhausted potentially from that. So just due to that factor, I'm not 100% sure you're going to be seeing the best version of this Nets team, but I tend to expect a pretty competitive game.
I'll tell you what, I'm kind of jealous that you get to cover the Nets. I know that's not something that most people have probably ever said to you.
No.
but the reason I say that is, look, obviously it's been something of a mess the last few years. And, you know, even more so, I mean, as much as people were, you know, bagging on the Sixers for the process and, you know, how slow and gross that process was at times, Philly had their picks and they were able to, you know, get the guys that are starting to do their thing. Whereas for Brooklyn, because all the picks were traded, it's like, oh man, how are they possibly going to work around this? But that's what's like, for just from that point, like once they realize they hit bottom and they got to work around this, I just think it's such a creative place to be. And I love the fact that, like, I'm not the biggest D'Angelo Russell fan, and, you know, I get the concerns about Okafor, but the fact that with, you know, you guys were able to get the second and third pick from the 2015 draft now without really having to give up a ton to get it, it's sort of crazy to think of it that way. And, you know, I think they've made some smart moves. You know, they're keeping enough cap space to be able to acquire some of these players. You know, again, it's a slow process, and we all know the NBA only works if you get ultimately, you know, one or two really stud players, and we don't know if Brooklyn has any right now. But I just like the fact that it's just fun to play in that space on some level. How are you possibly going to get out of this hole? And it looks like they're taking some positive steps to do that.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, that's obviously, I think you have a really good read on the situation, Ben. And it's something that Josh, my usual co-host, and I have covered a lot this year and have gone kind of back and forth on, like, where is this team? And, like, is it a good thing that they're competitive? Because for my money, like, the worst thing about this run is it kind of, I mean, since that Celtics trade, it kind of robbed them of an opportunity to tank for a couple of seasons, because they have been so bad for the majority of the last 3 years. They can't really justify to their fan base being that bad again once they get their picks back. And that potentially robs them of the ability to get top-level talent. And now Sean Marks has been there are areas where you could critique him a little bit, but for my money, he's been nothing short of brilliant on the whole and maneuvering around that and finding ways to acquire top guys, as you said, without having those picks and without necessarily having great assets to trade. But you look at D'Angelo Russell, you look at Jahlil Okafor, neither of those guys are, I mean, maybe they'll turn it around at some point, but for my money, neither of those guys are ever going to be defensive stalwarts. Obviously, Okafor might only be a rental. And you look at the Nets long term, and you just kind of wonder where they are in terms of acquiring that potential superstar, or if that guy's on the roster and someone like Caris LeVert or Jared Allen, even more of a long shot down the road, could make that jump. And you kind of see a team that's shaping up just because of how good Marks and Atkinson have been, because they really should objectively be terrible right now, but because of those two, is shaping up to be a pretty good team in the East over the next 5 or 6 years. But if you're the Nets, do you want to top out as that? Is that acceptable, being a good, fun team? And I think a lot of Nets fans and a lot of Nets pundits would say yes, given how disastrous this team in Brooklyn and for so long in New Jersey had been for years and years and years. Having a fun, competitive team is something to look out for. But then if you're of the mentality championship or bust, I don't know if they're laying the foundation for that, and it's not the fault of Marks. It's not the fault of Atkinson. It's you have to point the finger to Billy King, because that's the reason that they're not just stocked with young, talented guys, even though there are good players on the roster. So it's really, really complicated, and it all kind of depends on how you look at team building. Excuse me for ranting about it, Ben, but this is a subject that really fascinates me. And I think you're right. The Nets are a really interesting case study in how to build an NBA team, just because their situation was so uniquely terrible.
Yeah, no problem. I like I said, that's the thing. Like, I love sort of this kind of thinking. And in terms of how to view them, you know, I've ranted about this before, but if you're somebody who thinks it's championship or bust, be prepared to have a miserable life. Because the reality is, there's only, like, in the NBA in particular, there's not many teams that even get close. It's pretty much, I mean, just in the last decade alone, it's pretty much just been LeBron, whichever team he's on one side, against, you know, what, Golden State and,
San Antonio,
right, pretty much, right? I mean, so it's, yeah. You know, everybody else is doing what they can do, but, you know, so you either have to, you know, hope you have fun doing it, you hope you put yourself in the best position possible. That's why I tell Wizards fans all the time, everybody's, like, desperate for the Wizards to get the third superstar, whatever they think that is, and they don't think the Wizards have enough. I'm like, look, they have not lived up to the hype so far. They've been a little disappointing. I mean, they have a winning record, so it's not, like, terrible. But, you know, they haven't been quite consistent enough. But I'm like, the goal realistically should be put your team in position every year to potentially win, contend, if breaks go your way. You know, i.e., in the case of the Wizards specifically, LeBron gets hurt, or I was going to say maybe Boston's best player gets hurt. Of course, that did happen. and arguably their best player, and then it still doesn't matter. They're still kicking butt because Brad Stevens is a Jedi. He may be the last Jedi.
Yeah.
That movie coming out is about him, the last Jedi, I assume. So that's why it's fun. Yeah, we'll see. Like I said, I'm not the biggest Russell or Okafor fan. But I the fact that they've been able to maneuver themselves into position to take flyers on those guys that they wouldn't have had otherwise, I think is pretty interesting. By the way, while we were talking, I just realized there is another connection between these two teams that we need to discuss.
Oh, throw it at me.
You guys tried to poach Otto Porter.
Oh yeah, we did. We did do that. We will take full blame for that.
You guys tried to get out of Porter. Did you? I mean, I for 1 second did I ever think that the Wizards were going to let him go, for the basic reason that, one, he's been good, and two, they didn't, based on their cap situation, if they let him go, they literally couldn't have spent money to go do anything else. So it was keep Otto Porter or basically take a step backwards. Obviously, they kept him. And, you know, I think for the most part, it's worked out pretty well.
He's been great.
Statistically, he's like their best player. I don't think that's necessarily the reality, but the numbers love him and he's done well for the most part. But for when that went down, was the take in Brooklyn, oh, maybe we're getting this guy? Or was it always, oh, come on. This is like, we're just doing this to sort of do it, to try, but it's not actually going to happen.
Yeah, no, I think at least I can't speak for the fan base. Maybe some people are more optimistic than me. I mean, Josh and I don't think ever really saw a scenario where the Wizards were letting him go. Though I think we did. We might have done an episode this summer talking about how he'd fit with the Nets. So maybe being a little bit of revisionist history. But yeah, he would have been a great fit on the Nets, obviously, as like a very analytically driven game, which is exactly how Kenny Atkinson and Shaun Marks have kind of structured this team. So it would have been nice to have him. And I'm always like a little bit torn on the Nets, like throwing out like major dollar figures on guys who, I mean, Porter is proving that he's worth it, but at the time, maybe a little bit generous given how good he'd been in the past, and the Nets had done that with Alan Crabb, who obviously they ended up getting this year, and then they did the same thing, throwing $50 million at Tyler Johnson. And it's almost like I like it kind of from a competitiveness standpoint, because you're making all these teams, you're competing against for assets and other free agents. You're like, all right, you want to keep your guy, we're going to make you spend an absolute premium to do it. But on the other hand, I'm wondering if maybe – it's hurt relations with those teams, or if everyone just kind of sees it as gamesmanship and it doesn't really hurt any feelings. Like, obviously they were still able to pull off a trade with Portland to get Crabb back. But in general, I kind of like the Nets doing that and kind of kneeling other teams and saying, we're going to make it as hard on you as possible to keep your young talent.
Yeah, no, look, I don't know if you play fantasy football, but whenever I'm in sort of an auction draft in fantasy football or fantasy baseball, like, there'll be times where, like, I already got my slugging first baseman or something, and there, you know, I know that, like, there's a, you know, the best player left is a guy who should go for a lot of money, and he's another first baseman who I don't want. I will absolutely, if it's my turn, I'll throw him out there. I'll drive up the bid, get out in time, do everything I can to get other people to spend their money, because I want to go get somebody else. I don't want them to have the money when it comes time for that, you know, shortstop I need or whatever. So I know it's I know that's probably a silly analogy, but yeah.
Why no, I like it. I like it. Yeah, just being a little bit of a competitive dick, and I think you have to do that a little bit. And then the Nets have excelled at it in the last few years.
I will say this: I think that the Nets, even though Otto Porter has done well, and he's a guy that I've covered since Georgetown and have liked, I don't think he would have been a great fit for the Nets in that he's not. There are people here who still think he's overpaid. And I understand the inclination to think that, but I think he would have been definitely more in the view of being overpaid with the Nets, because he's not a quote unquote franchise player. He's not a guy that you're going to, here's the ball, you lead the way. He's more of a really good, complimentary piece who does a lot of the subtle work that if you're just watching it looking for highlights, you're never going to see necessarily. So I don't know how that would have gone over if he had come to Brooklyn and been sort of painted as, oh, they just made this big signing. I don't know if that would have worked. So I think it probably worked out best for all that he didn't go to Brooklyn. But, so I would have been curious to see how that would have worked out. But, kind of glad it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, it's definitely possible. I don't know. I think Nets fans were just so starved for good basketball. They would have taken anything and just kind of ignored the money. And that's why people are still cheering for Alan Crabb here, even though he's been playing better recently. He's, on the whole, he hasn't quite lived up to that contract quite yet. Ben, I wanted to throw something back at you. It's like, what is it, year five, year six now of the John Wall, Bradley Beal backcourt? I know we haven't gotten to see a ton of them together just because Wall's been injured the last 2 weeks, but what do you think of that dynamic so far this year? And to me, at least, it seems like Beal is really taking a step forward, while Wall, I know he traditionally gets off to slow starts, but hasn't really built on a season that made me think of him as like a top 15 guy in the entire NBA.
Yeah, I mean, look, you couldn't draw up a better backcourt dynamic. I mean, you've got the point guard who's just a blur with the ball, who's looking to find teammates, and he can get to the rim, and you've got a shooting guard who's got, you know, one of the prettiest jump shots in the game. It's just who doesn't demand the ball. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hand at all times. It's just a great fit on paper. And I think we're finally starting to see that aspect of it really work, in part because Beal has taken his game to another level. Like you said, the last year and change, he's developed so much more of his game. He could always shoot, but he's been more aggressive. His dribble drive game is way improved. Now he's like not just able to get to the rim, but finish. He's also very patient. He's not like he's not overly forcing things the way you see some guys do, for sure. So he's shown the ability to lead without Wall. He scored 51 the other day at Portland. He's also shown the ability to, you know, wait for his turn when Wall is out there. But you mentioned Wall And you're right, this has not been, like, when he's played, look, this, some of the numbers are still pretty good, but, yeah, it hasn't been spectacular. And I would say that when I talked before about the ups and downs of the Wizards, a lot of them can be traced to, not solely, but in some level, to John Wall's demeanor, approach, attitude, especially defensively in that given game. When he's not completely engaged, the team tends not to be. And I think that's part of the reason. Now, that said, they've been up and down these last 8 games, and he's not even playing. So I can't put it – I'm not putting it all on him. Like I said, it's been a – it isn't just that. But, it'll be interesting to see, because this is really the first time in Bradley Beal's career that he's been able to sort of be the guy without any other – without John Wall or one of these sort of Paul Pierce, Nene-type guys around – to sort of take more of the control of the team. It's his team, and it's interesting to watch him take on that role, and now it'll be interesting to see how he and Wall get together whenever Wall comes back, if it's Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever, how they get together and does the dynamic change much at all? Hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully it's for the best, but it's always interesting when you see guys start to branch out, and how does that play with the other guy?
Yeah. That dynamic has always fascinated me, and I really do like just love watching those two play. I'm actually gonna, it's gonna be the second time this season I go and see the Nets in person tomorrow, so I'm really ecstatic to see that dynamic, assuming a Wall does end up playing. And I don't know, he was a guy who I just had such high expectations for coming into the season. I saw him as kind of someone who could even go up to another level and maybe be a legit MVP candidate. Now that seems kind of ridiculous just because of like just how much front loaded star power there is in the league. But I've been a little bit disappointed with him, and hopefully without injuries, once he gets healthy, he can get it together. And I know he's someone who tends to get stronger as the season goes on. So I still have hope that that could happen. How about that Wizards bench group seemingly playing better of late? Thomas Satoransky, a guy I liked a ton when he was coming over from Europe. He's been playing a lot better, at least in like the quick box score looks I've seen. What are you seeing from him, and what are you seeing from the Wizards bench as a whole recently?
Well, so when Wall goes down, they moved Tim Frazier into the starting role. The Wizards acquired Frazier in the offseason to sort of the Wizards backup point guard situation is akin to the drummer in Spinal Tap, if you're familiar with that. It's just every year, it's just a different guy. It's a different situation, and doesn't rarely seems to work out. And Frazier's been solid. He's sort of he can get the job done, but and he's been okay with the starters. The problem when he was with the backups, though, is they just don't have a very dynamic reserve unit. They have a lot of guys who are okay, but they need sort of help getting their own shot, things like that. And Frazier wasn't really doing that because he's got his own limitations. He can't shoot well, and he's a pretty small guy. So when he got moved into the starting lineup, it gave Satoransky some more consistent minutes at the backup point guard spot. And we're talking about a 6'7 athletic guy who's got really good vision passing, and he's super aggressive getting to the basket. And now, all of a sudden, the bench unit is just looking like one that's actually pretty good. I mean, the bench unit's been far more consistent without Wall than the starters have been. Other than that 47-point loss they had the other day at Utah when everybody was a disaster, the bench has been pretty good this whole stretch, and part of it is with Satoransky, he's made Mike Scott better. Mike Scott's been just killing it from the field lately, shooting. Jan Mahimi, who's been a huge mess for most of the time he's been at the Wizards, these last 7 or 8 games has been, pretty solid, giving him rebounding and defense, things like that. He did apparently skip practice today with some kind of a knee issue, so that's something to watch. But, Satoransky has been a huge deal, and the real question, what's really concerning with Wizards Nation, is will Scott Brooks go back to having Frazier be the primary backup point guard for Wall and Satoransky going back to the bench? If that happens, Wizards fans will not be happy, and there may be at least one person who hosts a Wizards podcast who won't be either.
Oh no. Yeah, that's an absolute worst case scenario. Yeah. That's interesting. I still kind of have hopes for that for Washington putting it all together, and it seems like it kind of hinges on that bench unit, because when push comes to shove, we have such a long track record of that starting five being really, really effective. So that would be kind of cool Anyways, Ben, that's pretty much all I had for you on my end of things. Any concluding thoughts?
Well, no, I'm excited to, you know, it's, by the way, this is these two teams are going to play twice in at least for the Wizards, a 7-game stretch or 6-game stretch with both games in Brooklyn. You guys are sandwiching a 4-game homestand. So we'll, you know, these teams will get back together before the end of the year. You know, it'll be exciting to see Okafor, who, if he plays real minutes, Okafor's had good success against the Wizards in the past. So curious just to see him finally shake off that rust. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like the Nets are, you know, like the way you described it, in my opinion, they're a scrappy team that if you're not ready to go, you're going to get beat because they probably will be.
Yeah.
And the Wizards, it's been just so up and down. They've looked really good, and, you know, just they looked really good against Portland the other day and had a pretty good win on the road. And then they just couldn't finish off a Clippers team that's missing a bunch of dudes. So, you know, who knows which team we'll get. But, you know, the Wizards, if they win this, they close out the road trip with a winning record. So you'd like to think that that's got, you know, there's some motivation there, but we will see. It should be, either way, it should be exciting, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat me up here, Gavin, and, you know, give us your take on all things Brooklyn Nets.
No problem, Ben. It was an absolute pleasure. Yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm sure we'll do it again at some point this season.
Absolutely. All right, man, cool. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon. All right, many thanks to Gavin Shaw covering the Nets for the Locked On Podcast universe. Thanks to you guys, as always, for listening. We'll get to talk about a game tomorrow, Wizards-Nets. We'll see if the Wizards can get a winning record on this road trip, come back home with at least some momentum, and we'll talk about all of that here on the Locked On Wizards Podcast. Until next time, see ya.
Everybody just Neal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot.
Dagger!